Lori Prox here with Dr. Kathleen Todd of the Valdez Medical Clinic, also emergency doc at Providence Valdez Medical Center. And we wanted to start with what should people do, but what can people do? I think we're focusing a lot on what we're not supposed to be doing, but what are healthy choices? What can people be doing out there, and especially for their health? You know, we're at a point where I think folks are maybe not going to the doctor. They are, you know, maybe restricting themselves, not going outside a bit, but there are more facets to good health than the coronavirus. That you can get the coronavirus, that is obviously not good for your health, but overall health, what can and what should people be doing right now so that they're staying healthy right now?
Well, I'm looking out the window at a beautiful day today. So yes, right now, they should be out there enjoying the day.
Wait, did you give me permission to leave work?
That's what we have the advantage of here in at least our part of Alaska. We're so far from each other. My daughter in Chicago opens her window, and there's another window about 3 feet away from it. And so sometimes you get advice of, you know, people in New York City have to stay in their apartment. Well, that's because they're so close together. Whereas many of us have yards. Many of us have, if not our yard, you could get in your car and go wander around Old Town and not meet anybody. Or getting outside and just walking down the park strip or whatever, as long as you're far from other people. And so, you know, we have that advantage. Unfortunately, you also have to think ahead here and not compromise it too much. Oh, well, our barbecue was outside, and so the fact that we had 50 people standing around on our microscopic yard all 2 feet away from each other eating, so they didn't have any masks on, that's not going to work. It's not a get out of jail free for anything because we're outside card. but we really can get out and away quite well. You don't have to wear your mask on your boat with just your family out there catching salmon. So you know, that is just as isolated as you would be in your house. If you're in your car with your people, you can drive up the road and go do whatever you would do up there, as long as it's with your little set of people that you've been together with the whole time. So we're really lucky here to have space.
Definitely fortunate for that reason. And don't want to spend a huge amount of time on it, but the basic tenets of protecting yourself from coronavirus have remained the same. 6 feet of distance from others, wear a mask, and don't get in huge groups of folks. So people have heard that, but and a lot of folks are asking for, what can I do now? Can I do this? Can I do that? But really, I think common sense might be our friend here in determining your situation and what you should be doing.
The other thing is that, remember, it's not all about how big the group is all at one time. It's about how many people you come in contact with. So if we find out that person A has corona, they come down with some symptoms, they get a test, whatever, they're positive for coronavirus. Then we need to figure out how many people they contacted who could have caught it from them. Contacted meaning they were in close proximity to them without a mask on for more than 10 minutes, say. Of course, you could get it just walking by somebody at the post office, but it's much more likely if you sat there and ate across from them at a restaurant or drank across from them at a bar with your face uncovered and you were close to them for a longer period of time. That just makes sense. But we're going to want to know how many people they contacted and how many people contacted them. And so if they saw 10 people today and 10 people tomorrow and a different 10 people the next day and a different 10 people the next day, that adds up to 100 pretty fast. Where if they saw the same 10 people every day, that's only 10 people. And you either want to keep those contacts. Well, you want to keep those contacts at a minimum to begin with, but you also want to make sure that they're the same contacts. You know, if you're going to have people that you invite over to barbecue outside with your mask on, except when you're actually eating, far apart, all those things, it would be nice if you kind of picked a group and stuck with the same group as opposed to a different group every night.
And with the contact tracing here in Valdez, we've had three resident cases, a recent one, and it is an extensive process of contacting people, and I would imagine we're probably keeping up with the resident cases because we haven't had a lot, but how have the non-resident cases affected our contact tracing here in Valdez?
Well, the non-resident cases that are at the fish packing plants are kind of a separate case because they have to kind of worry about is there somebody new, a new employee who came in, or did any of employees from here go home or something like that? But except for that, you know, total, you know, coming to work for the first time or leaving for the last time, those folks really are on an island. They are not coming to and from town as they do in other years. They're really pretty much restricted as if they're on Alcatraz or something like that.
But to that end, they're isolated from Valdez because they haven't been in our population on this side of the bay. But is there, I was wondering if there's contact tracing required because they came from somewhere, if they have it.
They can do some of their own contact tracing because they've set it up that way. So they are they're somewhat easier to take care of than the general public in terms of contact tracing. That is, they came in the bus with these other 12 people. I don't know
but as far as their friends
numbers,
and family
but
from wherever they came from.
We know that they've only been exposed to these particular people, and they're keeping very good records. So it makes it pretty easy. Whereas if somebody in town comes down with COVID, you know, they have symptoms, they get tested, or, you know, we know that they've got COVID, trying to figure out where they got it from is sometimes relatively easy. Oh, the people from the lower 48 came up here, they had symptoms, they tested positive, that's where you got it from.
We don't have that many places to go, so it's got to be a little easier here.
Exactly. Or it could be, gosh, I don't know. I work with one other person. I've stayed home the whole rest of the time. Oh, I did go to that one party. Well, then the contact tracer is going to say, okay, who was at the party? And if that person can say, well, there are five people, and I don't know that person's name, but I'll find it out for you, then the contact tracers working for the public health nurse are going to, you know, talk to all those people, see if any of them are sick, see if any of them are at high risk for having been an asymptomatic carrier, so that they can say, wait a minute, you probably gave it to our index person, and so you could be giving it to other people, so you are in quarantine so that we don't, you know, so that you don't spread it again. and then, so there's that kind of contact tracing. Where did you get it from? And the smaller that your circle is, the easier that is. And if you can remember all those people's names, it's even better because the poor public health nurse trying to figure out who that is really, it takes more and more time the less you know who those people are. And then that's where did you get it so that somebody else doesn't get it from the same people? And then who could you have given it to before you developed symptoms? Because remember this crazy disease, you're just as contagious maybe 2 days before you got your symptoms than you are right when you get your symptoms. You came down with your symptoms on Monday. You didn't kind of get motivated to go to the doctor because it could have been something else until Tuesday. But, you know, what happened Saturday and Sunday? Who were you around Saturday and Sunday? Because those people were exposed to you the 2 days before you got your symptoms. And so we have to go back that far to say, you know, who were you in contact with? And so if you say, gosh, I just went out fishing all day Saturday and Sunday, and it was just the people in my family, then it's just the people in your family that are going to have to be quarantined if you actually have COVID. So that the smaller the circle, the easier it is for the contact tracers.
And I know sometimes you wonder if people, you know, are listening out there, but I did get we got a picture submission for the Kids Pink Salmon Derby, and it was a kid with a fish. They had a mask on the fish because they mentioned it was not a member of their family, and they had to get closer than 6 feet. So the message is getting out, protected from, you know, the fish even. So I thought we would go to contact tracing. I've talked a lot about that because, you know, I think information is great for folks to know. What is it they're asking? What are they telling people to do? And as we look ahead, we've been saying this since the get-go, people are going to get this, and we need to know how to handle it. So to that end, you sent me, well, actually, I'm funny because someone was listening to the podcast of our interview in Anchorage and sent us, sent me some information. You also sent me some information. Also, I got sent a job information for the CDC, so that's funny.
Trying to steal Lori away from us.
Well, it pays better than my current position. So and it has health care, which I don't have. So that would be great. But I think working for the CDC would be interesting. So. I just always go back to Monsters, Inc. and the sock, and that's my vision of CDC. And it's changed a bit since coronavirus, but I know some people are getting me. So you have to watch the movie, and when the sock when you see the sock, you'll know what I'm talking about. So okay. Widespread coronavirus disease 2019 in Alaska. I have a document here from Alaska Public Health, reminders and updated release on isolation criteria. So I want to get to, what's the criteria? So if someone does get COVID or they are a contact, what do they need to be prepared for? Because I know, folks are going to get it, and then we need to know how to handle that in terms of work. But first, before you go in and get tested, you need to kind of know symptoms. We've talked about those a lot, but have any of the symptoms changed?
I think they've finally quit adding on symptoms. The thing that has changed, that is still changing, is what's the most likely symptom in which age group. That changes still as they get to know more and more about, as you test more and more people, you say, temperature isn't the be-all and end-all. The kids tend not to run fevers early on as much as we think they're going to. Or, for instance, the new recommendation is that you have to go back to work.
Now, when it comes to medicine,
you have to have not had a fever for one day as opposed to 3 days. So the fever tends to hang on longer than you might expect. So we find out things like that, but I don't think they've changed the list. Recently.
And your recommendations are coming from the state of Alaska, the CDC, who?
Which symptoms we're putting on the list are the same.
I'm just wondering who is they? They're the recommendations. So who is?
Well, the list of what symptoms we are looking out for.
You're getting that like maybe as a member of the Valdez Unified Command, or are you getting that as a doctor, and who are you getting the information from?
Yes, all of the above, but many of them are all referring back to the CDC. And so, the stuff about which age group is likely to present with which symptoms, that doesn't necessarily get codified by the CDC when people are still making observations. But then when the observations are solid enough, they've been reproduced by in a lot of different populations. They're not just from one hospital that's observing a certain thing, because that might have been due to their population. But once they're pretty solid, then the CDC will change its recommendations, as it did fairly recently, to say you only have to be one day without a fever if you're also without all these other things, but only one day without a fever instead of 3 days without a fever. That just came out, and they wouldn't have changed that without it being, from many different sources instead of just somebody's observations. But I hear about somebody's observations much sooner than I hear about the new guidelines.
All right. So what you sent me here about the isolation criteria. So let's go through this as if I get tested and I have coronavirus. What's going to happen right now, and then what is the effect on any of my close contacts?
So you, as the person who tested positive for COVID, hopefully will not get very sick. That's what most people do. So this is not a death sentence for you know, for most people, although some people get very sick and some of them are young people. But anyway, so you started having symptoms on the first of the month. And you got tested on the third of the month, and you got your test results back on the eighth of the month, unfortunately. You should have, when you started to have symptoms, you should have said, oops, and started isolating yourself, not going to crowded things, staying home, actually not even crowded things. You should have been staying home and basically doing what we did last spring, but just you yourself. And so you quit having more contacts. You keep your contacts to the ones you've already got in your household or whatever, and you didn't go to work. And then you got your test back, and it was positive. You're still counting your 10 days from the first symptom. And if you have a really mild case and now you're over your sore throat or your little bit of cough or whatever, your symptoms have gone way down and you haven't had a fever for one day and your symptoms have been down for 3 days and it's 10 days from when you got your first symptom, then you can go back to work. So that's the person who presented with symptoms. So now your spouse was exposed to you. They don't have any symptoms, but you proved out to be positive, and they were around you for all those days, of course, and even for the days before you had symptoms, right? And so they are under the same quarantine. They, you know, you really should have somebody else bring you your groceries. You should, you know, yes, you can go walk around your yard and out in the middle of nowhere, but go places in your car by yourself, but you really shouldn't be out and about at all. And so they shouldn't be going to work either unless they can work from home. And they have a 14-day window because, remember, it's going to take them a few days to develop it if they're going to. So they have the incubation period added on to the 10 days. So they're in this stay away from everybody mode, quarantine, for 14 days. If they, in fact, get tested at the appropriate time and it's positive, for some reason, or let me do it different. Let's not say it's a spouse. Let's just say, oh, gosh, it's going around. I think I'm just going to go get a test, and it turns out positive, and you were totally asymptomatic. Then you're counting from the test because you don't have any symptoms to go from. You go from your positive test. So whichever one happened first is what you're counting from on the 10 days. Now, if you're super sick, they're saying 20 days. You know, the people who are really sick probably do shed virus longer, but the people who are, I felt a little under the weather. I felt like had no energy and I couldn't taste and smell and I had day of diarrhea and a day of headache. You know, those people are the 10-day people.
Now, when are a lot of these symptoms, and I know you haven't seen that many patients personally, but when are these symptoms, is it different for everyone when they go away? I know I've read a lot of folks are having symptoms for a very long period of time, but for someone who's asymptomatic, is there a theme? Are they maybe having no taste or smell for a little while, or, you know, mild cough? And
well, asymptomatic is asymptomatic, nothing. And so we've got some people who are positive for COVID and they fit in the pattern of they were exposed to somebody and whatever. We're not doubting that the test really is a real positive, but they have nothing. And so we have everything from no symptoms to people who die. Of the people who get hospitalized, most of them still have some symptoms two months out. And so this is this could be a very serious illness, or it could be a not much of an illness. Some of the people who are asymptomatic actually have chest x-ray changes. And why aren't they symptomatic? We don't know. What's going to happen in the long run? We don't know.
So what is going on when someone has a positive test? Maybe they are not with symptoms, they have a test, and 3 days later, it's a negative test. Maybe they have another one 3 days later and it's negative. So how do you address that? There's any myriad of circumstances and test results you can get.
Well, what we have to remember about the tests is that they're not 100%. We would love tests to be black and white. You know, you have this disease or you don't have this disease. And there's two different ways that this test could be off. And that's not saying somebody put the wrong label on it or whatever. That happens very, very rarely. So just not counting that kind of errors. It's quite possible that the test isn't positive when you actually have the disease, because it's not 100% test. So at that particular moment in time, you didn't happen to get any virus on the swab, and we know that happens even from bronchial washings, like fluid from the lungs of people who are on ventilators, that you can get a negative test off of that in any one particular day. And not very often, but it still could happen. And so, just a nasal swab, you could just not swab exactly the right spot, or the virus stuck to the swab instead of getting transferred into the machine, whatever. There are some false negatives on these tests. So it could be that the one that was, you know, you got one that was positive and one that was negative. It could be that the other one's a false negative because you didn't just happen to get the virus on there that time. And that happens, you know, depending on the test, depending on how mean you are with your swabbing and whatever, all that sort of stuff, and what day of the illness you're doing it on, that happens 10-20% of the time.
And really, most people are probably going to have no idea what day of the illness, because when you get sick, it doesn't seem like, you know, oh, at 12:01 p.m. I have.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So,
for instance, if I'm exposed to COVID today, you know, the patient in the hospital turned out to have a positive test and they were coughing all over me. So I can tell, you know, yes, it was within this hour that I caught it. If I did a test right then to see whether I'd caught it, it for sure wouldn't work, because the number of viruses I have in my nose at that moment is pretty small. I haven't given them days to multiply. So doing the test instantaneously to see whether I caught it from them is useless. So if you call in and say, hey, I was exposed, I want a test, we may say, okay, wait till Thursday. And you go, well, I don't want it till Thursday, but it's not going to tell you anything until you at least are in that zone where it could have multiplied enough in you that it's going to show up. And so you have to, you know, hunker down during that time because you could be contagious to the next person, but you're probably not going to be until those days have gone by that you have enough virus in your nose or your mouth or your whatever that they'd be coming out of you when you're contacting somebody else.
And so if you do have a negative, you have symptoms, you have a negative test, or if you have one positive test and a negative, probably safest to think about that 10-day window and stay at home
and
those 10 days.
And the way the tests are going right at the moment, yes, there are they're not instantaneous tests, but they're same-day tests. But those are a little bit less sensitive, and they are very labor-intensive compared to the ones that the state can run on the big machines. And so, unfortunately, we have to decide who gets those. But you specifically want to do it on the correct day also. And one test doesn't get you out of quarantine. You can't test out of quarantine with one test, because that's just not sensitive enough to pick up everybody. You get a false sense of security out of that. There is a, you know, two test, if you test negative twice, then the chance you missed it twice is, of course, less than the chance that you missed it once. So there is a two test strategy, but frankly, at the moment, it takes so long to get the test back that you're probably going to end up waiting 10 days anyway by the time you get the test back. So, we're sometimes not doing that second test as a way to get back to work, because it's already day 8, and so you're not going to get any information. A lot of times the test is the best for figuring out what to do with the people who are in contact with you, not to do with you, unfortunately.
All right, and I did have some direction here. in this update on isolation criteria, contact tracers, it says, should instruct patients who test positive to inform all persons with whom they had close contact starting 2 days prior to illness onset or 2 days prior to the date of specimen collection if they are asymptomatic, up until the time when they went into isolation. Close contact defined as being within 6 feet of the person for at least 15 minutes. In most instances, this would mean that everyone in the patient's household will need to be quarantined for 14 days beyond the time that the index patient is no longer infectious. And this was...
Well, not 14 days. Yeah.
This is July 23rd, 2020.
I couldn't hear that. I'm sorry.
The date on this document is July 23rd, 2020. Mm-hmm. This is the document that you sent me. So you're saying, but it does say in the body of it, maybe they didn't update that page.
In your house? If you had a way to, and they're in quarantine too, so you can't just send them to grandma's house because then you're taking it over to grandma, and now she's part of this too. But if you have a way to take those people and, send them to your mother-in-law apartment that is separate, and you don't use the same bathroom, and you don't, you're absolutely separated from your spouse or your kids, then their 14 days starts from then. If otherwise you are sick at home, they're still being exposed to you all that time, and so their 14 days is all of that plus when you are done, so 10 days for you. So it could get really long for the contacts unless there's a way to make the contacts no longer exposed to you.
Actually, this is interesting. This is the document that you sent to me from the Department of Health and Social Services. But in the body of the email, it says 10 days. It says providers should instruct patients. This is providers who are positive. Yeah. They will need to remain in isolation at least 10 full days. But it is, the attachment is different. So.
Well, or is it different, or is it saying that's one
that's
thing
regarding contact tracers.
Is positive and it's longer. It seems weird, but it's longer for the people who are the contacts.
Yeah, it definitely is. This is for contact tracing. So that is 14 days, and this is directed toward providers. Should instruct patients who test positive to inform all persons. So that seems to be the distinction here.
Yeah.
So
many of those documents do say, watch out for contacts, because the contacts are going to have to be longer because we're waiting for that incubation period. And if they keep being exposed to you, the index case, then they're, it could have been that they didn't catch it from you the first day you had a symptom. They caught it from you on the seventh day you had a symptom because they're still living in the same house with you. And so they have to start counting their 14 days. They're isolated from the world during those 7 days that they're with you, but also then 14 days after the last day that they were with you that was...
Okay, because everyone's looking to hang their hat on a number, but it's important to note that that does make sense that providers, so someone who is tested positive talking to a doctor, you're going to say, okay, 10 days because you already have it, but for contacts, a little longer.
Yeah.
So they have not an opportunity to get it.
It makes sense, but it looks weird. Why do the contacts have to stay out of commission or out of the population longer than the person who actually has it? It's actually that we wish that the person who actually had it had isolated before that, but we already missed that. That's water under the bridge. We can't do anything about that. And so it's going forward that is a little bit longer. And the other thing, contact a provider and whatever, the logistics of this in Valdez are that if we can get people in the drive-through of testing, it is so much more efficient in terms of using up resources.
And
than
do you know, is that being provided for close?
And there's two ways to get into that. One is to be, have a travel voucher or be part of a group that we're doing. The Silver Bay people who are coming are scheduled to do this whole busload of people at once and that sort of thing. But you also can get into that being minimally symptomatic. We're not trying to put you in the ER to see whether you need more oxygen or need to be in the hospital. You just have a few symptoms of COVID. You're going to stay home, but you want to know whether it is COVID or not, you have to get an okay from one of the providers in town to do that, because number one, we'll help you with the timing, but number two, we get the results back sooner. The other ones are going to get mailed to people, and that throws in another 3 or 4 days to get your results back. So if it's a situation where we really want to get the results as soon as possible from the state, it really does cut off three or four days to go through a provider. So that's why there's kind of two tracks. You're going to get the same test done, but how the results get back is different.
There was a program for frontline workers to also get tested if they wanted. Is that an ongoing program, or and have many of those been tested?
That's an ongoing program. There's not. It was kind of a big push back in May and June, and some of those organizations have said, "Well, we'll just do it once." Other people have said, "We don't want to do it at all," and I'll come back to that. Some of them have to do it over and over again. So, for instance, the people working with the nursing home patients are required by regulation to do it every 2 weeks. So those people are still trickling in. There's some businesses that you know, people haven't gotten around to it yet, but now that things are starting to happen, they say, "Hey, can I do that?" So they're still invited. I'm afraid I don't want to send my employees over to do that. If you think about it, you say, "Gosh, if this person turns positive, then or tests positive, we would have just skated through, and they wouldn't have. It would have been fine. If we hadn't known it, we wouldn't have had to put them on sick leave all this time." If you think about that, that's unfortunately short-sighted, because if they are in your break room and giving it, it could be that your whole staff actually gets sick, and then you really are closed down because you don't have anybody to serve the customers. So it's kind of better to have, you can think of it altruistically, that, boy, it'd be better to have one person isolated or their family isolated rather than the whole town going back to April. But you can also think about it as your business, that you really don't want all your employees out. You'd like to have one and not have them back in the break room so that all those people can start counting their 14 days now. I mean, whatever the situation is, it's still better for a few people to be in quarantine than the whole population.
If someone is a close contact of someone who tests positive, can they get a test here in Valdez?
Yes. The rule of thumb, and there's always exceptions, the rule of thumb is that we want to test the close contacts. We're not testing the contacts of the contacts. If you think about that, if I'm a contact of person A who has a disease, that I, person B, at some point could be an asymptomatic from having it picked it up from them, and so it makes sense to test me. But I'm now in quarantine, so testing the people that I was in contact with, person B was in contact with, I didn't have it at that time. You know, I didn't have it at the time I was going to work with them, and now I'm away from them, and so you don't need to test the second layer out. That does that make sense?
Well, is that short-sighted? You're saying it's important to know who has it, but I guess you're saying they're in quarantine anyway, so they can have it or not have it.
If person B tests positive, you know, say you test person A and they're positive. Oh, okay, and I'm person B and I'm their spouse, and I test positive, then yes, all the people that I contacted in work going back 2 days before I got my positive test and all that, you know, those same rules, now are my contact. But if they didn't ever meet my spouse, and they only met me before I caught it from my spouse, then they weren't really at any more risk than everybody else wandering around. And so,
how do you know who caught it first? I've often wondered that, though. Maybe she had it first. I mean, I'm not being funny.
Well, yeah,
we're saying a lot of things like really definitively.
And we would love to have the test back in 20 minutes, and we would love to be able to test like every other day. That would be really nice, but we don't have the technology to do that.
You know, when people are saying things with such certainty, and then, you know, I'm thinking logically, that's a very real possibility. The husband had to be tested for work, the wife didn't. How do you know? So
who gave it
assumption,
to whom. Yeah.
Those assumptions now are not the same as they were 2 minutes ago.
Exactly. And so we would love to have more testing and faster testing. But when you hear on the news that, oh, gosh, if we just did more tests, it would be great, that would be fine if the tests came back really quickly, if the tests were more sensitive. It would be, you know, I've heard a podcast that says, you know, we're probably about the same amount of time out from having that kind of testing as we are from a vaccine, unfortunately. But wouldn't it be nice if you could have a thing like that you could read like a pregnancy test. You could read it at home yourself, foolproof, in 15 minutes. And you could do that, you know, every other day for a dollar a test. If we had that, well, but we don't. You may have noticed that the governor basically made it next to impossible for anybody from the lower 48 who's not an Alaskan.
Yeah, we should mention
come to the state, and that's because they ran out of materials to test a few days ago.
Yeah, so, I don't think he included the motivation, but I think they were hoping, and it's a burden of cost as well when you're testing people who are coming from somewhere else in your state. It's a cost to Alaska, but. The new rule is you must test 72 hours prior. You must test negative before coming into the state of Alaska. So if you're unable to do that, then you can't come in. Previously, you could come here and we would give you the test, and then
quarantine. You could head to some remote cabin and just stay there. Or stay there in an Anchorage hotel and have room service, and you're not allowed to do that anymore. But that's because they ran out of testing materials, besides, the cost, but also just...
So, and I think some folks are saying, well, it's because, there's been a huge influx of those cases. So, I don't know that the motivation is that clear.
Well, the motivation is to make it harder for people to come.
Yeah.
it is, but it's too bad to... What makes this so impossible is that it's within 72 hours. You have to have a test, and you have to have the results in your hand within 72 hours. And that's very hard to do
in
Alaska.
And it is.
And
yeah.
It's impossible in some states. Dr. Cullen just got back from Oregon and went out and sat on his boat and waited for his test to come back, and it took 10 days from Oregon to get his test, besides jumping through a lot of hoops to get it done in the first place. So, other states aren't any faster than we are. Some of them are don't even do it for those kinds of reasons. So you want to travel? Well, that's fine, but get to the end of the line and we'll call you next month, So it's going to make it hard for people who are not Alaskans. You can still get a test in the airport or self-quarantine if you're an Alaskan returning, but if you are somebody else, if you're planning on having your relatives visit, have them start looking for tests right now because it's going to be almost impossible.
Yeah, and so let's get back to what we can do, what we could be doing. I'm one that's always saying, don't send me to the pharmacy. What else can I do? And I know initially, man, I had lots of interesting emails and people sending me messages and lemon, try this, try that. And of course we know President Trump likes to talk about different drugs, but there are a lot of things people can be doing without going to the pharmacy, right? So are there any natural things, lemon, what have you,
the only one that I've heard of recently other than being well-nourished and well-rested and all those sorts of things, the only one I've heard of recently that I put some credence in is vitamin D, that you don't want to be vitamin D deficient. And if you usually are an Alaskan that is outdoors in the summer and you're less indoors because you're, kind of hunkering down some, we probably are all more vitamin D deficient than usual. I like to say that I have never, and that's now too strong a word, but I hardly ever find anybody in Valdez that I test for vitamin D who is normal unless they are taking a supplement. Because how often do you go out in your shorts and tank top in Alaska, even in the summer? Either you're going to freeze to death or you're going to get bug bit. And so people tend to wear long sleeves, long pants, all the time around here. And in the winter, even though it's a beautiful day, even if you got out in your shorts on your ski trip, I don't know when you, why you do that, doesn't count because the sun is too low to the horizon. It has to go through too many layers of air, and we don't get the right wavelengths of light to make vitamin D very well. And you don't make as much vitamin D from your hands and your face as you do from the middle of your body. And we're just all low on vitamin D all the time.
No one wants
and
to
so
see an Alaskan
it
stomach.
It can't hurt to take a little bit of extra vitamin D, and they're thinking that that may make you more resistant to COVID. So you can kind of kill two birds with one stone there, even if it's not really good for COVID, but they're thinking it might be.
A friend of mine as well, who has darker skin, said, he's taking his vitamin
D. Oh, yeah,
D
that's worse, yeah.
Because they don't absorb as much.
Exactly.
So... anyways, there's something you can do, and
don't go overboard. It is possible to get toxic. Don't take out a whole bottle.
Yeah, we'll have a run on that. It'll be like toilet paper, but and don't buy out toilet paper or. And we didn't really talk about hand washing either. So throw that in there because that's
Hand washing for sure. People are worried about the kids wearing masks and they're going to touch their face and whatever. You know, I assume that my hands are contaminated. Except for the minute after I finish washing them. You know, I wash them before patients. I wash them after patients. I wash them after I touch the doorknob. I wash them again before I eat my lunch. Just assume that you've touched all kinds of things that other people have touched. And it helps to wipe off your, you know, go around and wipe off all your doorknobs in your business or whatever. It does help to do that. But somebody's going to turn around and touch the doorknob, and if they were the person who's coming down with COVID tomorrow, and they just cough into their hand, it could be. So just assume that your hands don't belong next to your face or on your food until you've washed them right then, or hand sanitize them if you don't have soap and water.
All right. Well, that might be a good place to leave it, unless you have anything.
No, I think that's a great place to leave it.
More to add. And thank you for coming in. And it's great to get a little more information on... you know, what happens when you have COVID and how long do you need to isolate, those types of things. And so thank you for forwarding me that information. And if the woman in Anchorage who's listened to our podcast is out there, thank you so much as well. I appreciate that. I've had several people chime in, Scott Smith, with information on how his experience was at the airport coming back to Valdez. And that's great information. Appreciate it to those of you.
And people really can help a lot in the contact tracing business by keeping their social circles small, but then also if they say, holy cow, I think I might have COVID, to tell their contacts right then to self-isolate, stay away from people, so that they are really running behind sometimes.
I love that idea of personal responsibility. And in Talkeetna, I think when this first started, there was a gentleman who had COVID, and he said, hey, I'm in my cabin, I just want to put it out there. And he hit, you know, all his social media sites and said, I have it, if you've been in contact. And I think there's probably a little bit of stigma, but I think as this goes on, that will lessen more and more. And as you've told us, you know, once you've had it and then you're isolated for 10 days, then you can come back out in the rest of the world. So definitely there is no shame in letting your contacts know what's going on and... getting through this and over it, I guess.
Yeah, that's the only way to go. Say, oop, I'm positive. Tell all the people, make a list of them for public health, so when they call, you're ready. And but you could tell them and say, hey, you should quarantine right now. Public health will tell you more later. But you were exposed to me, and I'm positive, and so. Please don't go out there and spread it to the next circle around.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining us.